Welcome to the Ars Technicast, where we bring you the latest in the worlds of computing, technology, science, and everything else in between. During each episode, a group of Ars staffers will dig deep into some of the issues we've covered on the site. We'll also talk about some of the other stuff we're doing when we're not circling the Ars orbiting headquarters. I am your host, Senior Apple Editor Jackie Chang, and on this week's show, we have our gaming editor, Kyle Orland.
Hi there.
Open source editor, Ryan Paul.
Hello.
Social editor, Cesar Torres.
Hello.
And Ars contributor, Casey Johnston.
Hello.
So this week we are dedicating our show to retro gaming. Gaming from our childhood, consoles, arcades, pretty much everything is open for discussion. And you guys may remember that by the time you listen to this, I guess it'll be earlier in the week. So earlier in this week, we published a feature where our staffers kind of reminisced about arcade games from our youth. And so this is what inspired this show. So I guess we don't really have a specific thing to kick off the show with, so I'll just kick it off with my little story, which is that when I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and my dad had this like strict rule among our house, and it wasn't that we couldn't play video games. In fact, my dad kind of loved video games, but he had this rule that within our family, our extended family, we could not have any duplicate console systems. So like our family, for example, had the Sega Genesis, and my cousin had a Nintendo, and my other cousin had this will out me as not a video game geek because I can't remember some of the other ones. There was a Dreamcast, and so we had to all only have one console, and then we had to trade them off like every other week. And this was just my dad's insane way of trying to get us all to save money. So that's my thing. So I kind of grew up playing Sonic since we had the Genesis and not the Nintendo.
Were you all close together so you could at least, you know, go visit the other consoles?
Yes, we were. At the time, we all kind of lived in the same little suburb, so it wasn't too terrible. It was just kind of inconvenient, especially for my brother and I, because we sort of got into all these games, and then, you know, you can't play Mario if you don't have Nintendo, so we had to go over to my cousin's house to play it.
Yeah, at least you had a connection, though. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I had to really choose between the Super Nintendo or the Genesis after having the NES first, and you know, my parents would not buy me both. They were kind of reluctant even to get me a new system. They say, "Oh, isn't the NES good enough?" No, obviously not. But I eventually chose the Super Nintendo and really tried very hard to ignore all the good games on the Genesis that I was missing. Kind of became a little bit of a fanboy for that reason.
We never had a Super Nintendo at all. Like, we were just completely Super Nintendo-less.
Oh, you missed out.
Oh, wow.
Good games.
Like, I don't know. Like, what? I don't even know what games were good on Super Nintendo.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Super Mario.
To start? Link to the Past?
Link to the Past.
Everything to do with Mario.
Mario RPG was awesome.
Mario RPG was great. If you like rhythmic RPGs. What else?
Contra
3 was really good.
Mm-hmm.
We're just listing off basically every title on the Super Nintendo now.
No, that's great. I actually never played any of these games, so
find an emulator. Get a good gamepad.
You know, I will say that the Super Nintendo was the first time when I felt intimidated by the controllers, because that was when they finally started expanding to all these multiple buttons. And I think I must have been getting older because I looked at it and I said to myself, like, how am I going to do this? Because NES was basically the direction pad plus the two red buttons, and this was just like a million. So I got over it, but at the time I was really scared.
The shoulder button, using your index fingers a little beyond you for the shoulder
button. I was like,
buttons.
What am I going to do here? But my cousins, I used to play a lot with them, and they were just like, no, you'll figure it out. And somehow you do.
Yeah, it was really important, I think, for opening up different ways to play. Like, being able to do stuff with your index fingers and then have the have your right thumb open for the second analog stick later on, I think that became pretty important to game design later. Like, if you're shooting a gun and you also have to aim it in a modern first-person shooter, that was the genesis of that way back when.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that I just thought that was such a great system that when I went to college, I took my Super Nintendo with me. And I think in my house, so my brother was 3 years younger and he wasn't going to college yet. So we each migrated with our own system that we liked the most. And I recall he took the Genesis because he was really into the sports games that came for that. So eventually, I guess each child started taking their favorite console to school. And my sister actually took the NES to school.
The school?
Yeah, and what she's the youngest, but she just loved the NES. Like, just playing the classic games, Mario, Metroid.
Yeah, it's funny how much those games still hold up for people who usually don't consider themselves gamers. When I was in college, I had an NES in our room, and whenever we busted out one of those classic games, we'd have the door open, and people would hear those sounds and just come in and watch us, playing, Super Mario Brothers 3 or even, like pinball or something. And there would always be a huge crowd gathered around and wanting to play the next round. Those games are so accessible, people aren't scared off like they might be if you're playing Halo or Call of Duty or something where they don't think they can hold up. But with the old games, they're like, oh yeah, it's so much fun, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, when I was in college, he's still a good friend of mine, but one of my roommates was he was big on like the GameCube and stuff. So we played like weird games on the GameCube, like Animal Crossing and things like that.
Oh man.
Oh my god, Animal Crossing was huge and required you to play at like 3 in the morning, didn't it, a lot of the time?
So I
different days of the year, yeah.
And within our apartment, actually, there became like this war. There were 4 of us, and people would be playing, at all hours of the night just so they could sneak into each other's towns and like dig up all the trees and stuff.
Oh my god.
It became kind of messy for a while, like roommate war on Animal Crossing.
Yeah, that's not supposed to be a really competitive game, but I suppose anything can turn into a competition when you're in a dorm room.
I will knock that cute little pig out of this house. Just you wait. I'm going to get you.
Exactly.
Did you ever make the mistake of resetting the system before you saved in Animal Crossing?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think I did, but somebody did.
And
somebody did, definitely, and it caused huge drama.
Yeah, the game really gets mad at you. It's self-aware. It's thinking.
I know. So what kind of... I'm curious as to which games Casey was into when she was young, because I really want to know this for some reason.
Oh, well, let me tell you. Actually, I was going to say earlier, I think the first system my family ever got, because we were... I mean, obviously, I was like 8 when the... No, I was younger than that. I was like 6, baby, when the... Super Nintendo came out, I want to say. And the first game I ever got that was like purchased as a gift for me personally and not for like my brother was Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island. Greatest game.
Such a great game.
Oh my god, so good. And it actually came into play later when I was working at College Humor. One of the editors was like making a video about old video games, and he was like looking for a certain kind of scene, and I remembered that scene in Yoshi's Island 2, or Yoshi's Island, where he touches these fuzzies, and then everything, everything just, starts going all weird, and, the screen goes wiggly, it's all crazy.
Oh, right.
Yeah. They call it getting dizzy, but I think there's a little bit of a drug undertone there.
the name of the level is Touch Fuzzy, Get Dizzy, but it's, Touch Fuzzy, Trip Balls.
Oh, yeah.
So anyone who ever says video games never come into play in your work, you are wrong, because it did.
Well, if you work at College Humor or Ars Technica, if you're
lucky. Job.
a small subset of the population.
What else did I buy?
The lucky ones.
We had every game system from the Super Nintendo going forward. We had a Genesis, we had the Super Nintendo. We had a Dreamcast.
Yay!
I played Sonic on that a lot, actually. That Sonic game was pretty fun. I don't think I ever finished it.
Okay. I'll let that one go.
Uh-oh, I feel some Sonic drama brewing. What's going on?
I am not a fan of Sonic Adventure. I think anything after the Genesis, Sonic is just gone way downhill.
Well, my critical eye for video games was not so refined, and I was like 9 years old.
I'll let you have it. I'll let you wade in your nostalgia.
I used to play Die Hard with my brother on Genesis, I think. Is it Die Hard? What am I thinking of? Like fighting game.
I do not know.
Oh, no.
Eternal Champions or Streets of Rage?
No.
It might have been Die Hard. There might have been a Die Hard
game. I think there was a Die Hard game I used to play. Oh, wow. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles games.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. Those were the best.
That game was amazing, but I couldn't finish it. I got to Shredder, the very last.
Were you playing in the arcades, or were you playing on
NES.
Oh, the original NES
mm-hmm.
game?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that game was ridiculous.
It was amazing. I mean, if I could have it near me right now, I would be playing it.
It was so badly made. There were parts that were just impossible in that original
game. So there was a... I'm sorry to interrupt you. There was a Ninja Turtles for Sega Genesis, right?
Yeah. Okay, you're talking about two different games here.
Right.
The NES one was just unfair, I felt. That level where you had to swim through all the electric...
that was awful, yeah.
The electric seaweed. Oh, man. You always drifted into it a little bit, and it only took, like, 5 hits to kill you. I struggled through it because, you know, I was 8 and had nothing better to do, but just memories of those times, man, makes me mad.
I was just going to say, my brother and I became really big fans of the Ninja Turtles on Genesis, again, because we were forced to play the Genesis most of the time, but it was a favorite game of ours. That was right when video game like competitions started getting big, like console mm-hmm. competitions. And so my brother and I dreamed of this day in which we would like team up and play Ninja Turtles in like some competition against someone. But I mean, that was just a dream. We never got good enough.
You never fulfill a dream deferred.
Yeah. And then we also tried again when there was a Jurassic Park video game that came out right after Jurassic Park, the movie. Mm-hmm. And again, we had grand fantasies of whooping some ass in these competitions, and we even went to out in Schaumburg, one of the Chicago suburbs, there is a really big mall called Woodfield Mall, and so they had like a big competition like screening thing there, and so we went and we played Jurassic Park, but then we did not succeed.
Did that game have the remember there was the he was like a computer engineer that eventually gets eaten, but he programs the computer?
Yeah, yeah.
Use the magic word.
Exactly. And like the compies would always be like tearing you apart at every turn. They would basically take you down no matter what. It was a pretty demoralizing game.
Speaking of video game competitions, have you guys seen the immortal movie The Wizard?
Yes, with Fred Savage, yeah?
With Fred Savage traveling across the country to take his brother to the video game Armageddon.
That's an amazing movie. I love that movie.
I never saw it. I downloaded it a while ago, but I still haven't watched it.
It's before your time. But I think
Fred Savage is really young.
I think it holds up.
He's like 6.
Yeah, he is really young.
It looks like The Wizard came out in 1989, according to the internet.
Yeah, it sounds about right. I remember that's the first time I and probably everyone in America saw Super Mario Brothers 3 at the very end when they unveil it on that big screen. They make a huge deal of it.
They previewed it, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Like they hadn't released it yet.
That was like a year before it came out in America.
They should do more stuff like that now. I would get into that.
Yeah, I remember being perplexed because he knew exactly where the warp whistle was in the first world by flying up there, and this was the first time anyone in America had played Super Mario Brothers 3, supposedly, and he's like, oh yeah, sure, there must be a warp whistle up here, it's just gamer's intuition or something. That really bothered me even when I was 7.
It just plays into the plot, okay?
Okay.
You need to just accept it.
I know, analyzing the plot of The Wizard is probably not the best use of my time, but you know, this is the kind of thing that goes on in my mind. What can I tell you?
So, what about Ryan? Were you into consoles and stuff when you were young?
Yeah, I had an SNES growing up. My brother had a Genesis, so I had exposure to both systems. I really had a love for the Mario games early on, especially Mario RPG, which I think is probably still my favorite SNES game. So, yeah, that kind of thing I always really liked. I also, like, was really into Zork, you know, like on the original Apple II version of Zork. When Myst came out, that was a big deal for me. The original Myst, I think, is still one of my favorite games. For me, though, like, I think, like, my real golden age of gaming would be, like, N64 stuff. Ocarina of Time, that Zelda game, I still think of as being just, like, a masterpiece. There was nothing else like it before, and, you know, it just, to me, that was really, like, the high point of my gaming experience, I think, as a kid.
I still get cravings for Ocarina of Time when I'll just be sitting like work and I'd be like, I really want to play Ocarina of Time. Like, I can't even explain it, but it was such a good game.
It's just, there's something about it that just, like, it just sticks with you.
Well, it's soothing, it works, everything works kind of the way it's supposed to, and they just, I don't know, every puzzle they put in those games, I don't think there's been any in the series that I've really been turned off by. Everything kind of works there. I sound like a total Zelda convert, I guess. But
you're not alone.
Serious, yeah.
you're not alone in that.
They're just good games.
Yeah. Ocarina of Time is great, but I remember I put that game down for, it must have been 3 years, because I got stuck in the water temple. Yeah, you knew it.
Yeah. And,
you know, I could have just, you know, printed something out. I had the proto-internet on AOL. I probably could have found a guide and just gone through it at that point, but it was just so frustrated. I was like, nope, I'm not going to play this game, and took years for me to get over it enough to go back and just suffer through that horrible, horrible puzzle, and then enjoy the rest of the game.
Yeah, that water temple was tricky, but it was kind of rewarding when you finally figure it out.
No, I ended up cheating.
Now, I'm going to commit some sacrilege right here. The original Zelda game, the very, very first one, I did not enjoy it at all. I still don't
really
care for it. Yeah, when that came out, you know, the platformers like Mario were far more interesting to me, and I just remember looking at that, and my cousin hadn't, and I thought, that looks as dull as could be. You know, I'll never play that. But then later in the series, yeah, they really changed things up. But SNES, that's probably my real entry point. A Link to the Past was amazing.
Have you gone back to the original Zelda in later years, now that you're more mature and realize
mature.
I don't know about more mature, but I should go and download it. It's probably like $3, right, in the store, in the Wii store.
Yeah, it's a $5. I think you can get it pretty cheap.
Yeah, I should do that, because I do play some of the other ones occasionally. Majora's Mask, I cannot get through, because it actually freaks me out. It's time-based, you know, the, like the clock is ticking down, and any game that's like that, it's too close to real life. Like, the way I'm running my day, I'm usually, like, scared that I'm running out of time for everything, so it's too much.
But you have the Magic Ocarina. You can always reset time, which you can't do in real life.
Yeah, I could use that.
That would be nice.
Really use that.
Yeah, as much as I love Ocarina, it seems like the Zelda games are always hit and miss for me. There are a lot of them that I just did not like. I did not like Wind Waker, and I did not like Skyward Sword.
A lot of people don't like Wind Waker. There's a lot of that game where you're just sailing along on big, empty blue ocean. And some people find that relaxing and really love it, and other people are just like, I want to get back to the game.
So, Kyle, I have a question for you specifically about that title. Like, would we consider that retro gaming? Since you handle all this stuff for the site, like a GameCube title from that time era, now we consider that retro?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to consider that retro, personally, because it makes me feel really old.
This makes us seem old, that's all.
The kind of accepted definition that I've heard is anything two generations back. So I think GameCube would still be last generation. We're currently in the Wii, and the GameCube was last. So I guess the second that the Wii U comes out, suddenly GameCube is crossed the Rubicon into retro. So you got a few more months for the GameCube to be not so old.
Did anybody else here play Ocarina on the 3DS?
No, I played just like a demo.
Yeah, I tried it a little bit, and I found it's not the same on the tiny screen.
I bought the 3DS specifically for that game. I really enjoyed playing it on there.
Oh, did you? See, yeah. I heard that they made some changes to the water temple to make it not as inscrutable as it was the first time. Did you get far and get through it? And notice
the
difference?
I still had plenty of trouble on that water temple playing through it on the 3DS. I didn't notice anything different. It was still a pain in the ass.
Huh. Well, still hard. If they made changes, they must have not been too substantial then, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess this is not a good time for me to say that I've never in my life played Ocarina of Time.
Oh. That's okay. There's plenty of retro games out there that I haven't played as well.
I'm writing a email to HR right now already.
Oh, no.
Please put this in her review.
My biggest regret is probably Final Fantasy III, also known as Final Fantasy VI, depending on how serious you are. I never played that one.
I never got into Final Fantasy games. Just didn't do it for me. Didn't like it.
They're very long, and they require a lot of, you know, grinding through, very similar battles where all you do is choose attack over and over. You need to be really invested in the story to give that amount of time, I feel.
I played the original, the early ones in the NES. And then I was kind of really into them, and I didn't mind like the turn-based gameplay. Like I was in high school, so it totally worked for me. And then I lost kind of the plot. And then the Final Fantasy VII on PlayStation, that's still one of the best games I've particularly ever played. Like they had these amazing cutscenes that looked like movies. The magic system was really cool, and the story I actually felt was fairly interesting for a Japanese RPG. I will still put that at the very top of my list of RPGs of all time.
That's damning with faint praise comparing it to other Japanese RPGs, I feel. Most of them are...
I don't know some of the other ones. I mean, there's hardcore ones that people get the port, you know, like, or the they just import them, but I've never gone that far. What would you say are the best ones of those?
I never really got into the whole Japanese RPG genre. I played Final Fantasy VII, and, you know, it's one of those games kind of like Myst, where you have it to kind of show off the new system. Like, Myst everyone had with their CD-ROM drive, and you could show off all the great graphics that were possible there. And Final Fantasy VII, everyone is wowed by the cutscenes. And, I like the story well enough to make it through, but just the pacing and, again, the grinding through everything, it just never really appealed to me.
I really enjoyed Final Fantasy VII. I thought it was a great one. I also really liked Final Fantasy III. If those of you who haven't played Final Fantasy III yet, the iPad version is actually really good.
I have that one, Ryan. Should I finish it?
The iPad one on there? Yeah, I liked it.
Really? I didn't know there was an iPad version. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, yes. It's really nice.
Square's been pretty good about releasing those on the iOS. Although, aren't they kind of expensive for iOS apps?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like 17? I think that's how much I paid for it.
Oh, yeah, that's way too much.
It was expensive, but
they sell. That's the thing. There's enough people out there. You find me one other app maker that can sell things for $17 on the iPad.
Well, it's to me, it's the effect of... it's what I wish Nintendo could do if they ever took that bold step of going onto another platform like that. I would quickly drop $20 to have Ocarina of Time or whatever.
Definitely.
With this, you know what you're going to get. I had never even really played Final Fantasy III, but I knew that in purchasing it, you know, I was going to get something that would work and keep me playing for quite a while. So I just haven't had a lot of time to get into it, but now you make me want to do it.
Yeah, and I got a lot of good hours of gameplay out of it. Certainly enough to justify the price tag. I thought, at least.
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen with Nintendo actually moving over to iOS. Everyone says, dedicated portables are done. This is their best move, and it's just not in Nintendo's DNA to do that. They really like being in control of the hardware and tailoring the experience to that. I don't think they're going to give that up unless they absolutely have to.
I think that, I mean, as a 3DS owner, I see a lot of innovation there, especially with, for example, the dedicated Mario 3DS game that they just released. You don't see as much of the innovation in the, classic games that they've ported, but with the Mario game, I mean, you really see some clever stuff that they're doing, taking advantage of the 3D and the hardware that they've got in the platform. And I think that Nintendo just culturally always going to need to do that, but at the same time, I can't help but wonder, if there are certain titles where they could bring a certain kind of experience over to other mobile devices. And, for example, a Pokemon game, you really don't need special hardware. In fact, I think that trying to do special hardware with a Pokemon game would probably detract from it. I mean, it's really just, that core RPG experience. I would just love to have that on the iPhone. And I think they could do some really fantastic things with it, that they wouldn't be able to do on a dedicated system, because on an iPhone they'd have an always-on connection and they'd have all of this other stuff that they could take advantage of to do multiplayer, where you can compete with someone in your vicinity and stuff like that. I mean, they could do some great stuff with it if they stopped and said, well, how can we take advantage of the mobile phone as a platform, rather than just porting something,
Yeah, they could. It's just I think they're a little too proud at this point and don't want to give up the profits they could take by controlling it. If Pokemon is suddenly on iPhone, then no one's going to buy, or a lot fewer people are going to buy the 3DS, which, leads to whole problems down the supply line from third parties. And yeah, it would be great, but I don't think it's in their interest.
If you want to know what game I spent a lot of time playing when I was little, oh my God, Pokemon Blue. Game over. So
Did you catch them all?
I did not catch them all, but I had level 90-something Venusaur. And, oh my god. I played it. Even after I finished it, I kept playing it. Playing the, what were they called? The Elite Four?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. So good. Loved Pokemon.
I love that, too. I had the red one. My brother had the blue, and we were playing that forever. It was just such a great game at the time.
Yeah, Pokemon was huge in my family because I think my parents just got one for each of us, and we would all trade and fight each other. It was awesome.
Well, I want to mention something here. I'm about to drop a bomb of these games. Do you guys remember Monster Rancher for PlayStation?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just tell you why. It plays off of all that Pokemon vibe, and you build up your animals. And if you guys recall, you could stick in an audio CD of any music that you had, and it would read it and then develop or generate some sort of monster that might look unique or different than the others. And depending on what CDs you put in there, if you put, the Rolling Stones, it might give you something with the color scheme from the album art, etc. I was obsessed with that game because I had all these CDs that I would experiment with and put in there. And Bjork's Homogenic CD, if you stuck that in there, it gave you this weird dinosaur-looking thing that had the color scheme from the album. Whoever came up with that, I just want to go and give them a prize. That game was so fun.
I think I remember this, and it was one of those things that I just irrationally wanted, even though I think I had no CDs. I just looked it up. It came out in 1997, so I was 10 years old, and I had nothing to my name. But it looks really cool.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that one. I never quite got into it, but I would have loved to. I had all these CDs from my parents lying around. That would have been great.
Yeah, the mechanics of it weren't as sophisticated, I think, as Pokemon, because I think Pokemon in its simplicity just, keeps you really hooked on playing. And this one had a little more action, but it wasn't as addictive. So, I played it for quite a bit, but I think the novelty of generating these monsters based on music that you had in your collection was super neat. I wish there were more ways of doing that now. Maybe barcodes on books that you own or things like that. Wait, books that you own? Who's buying books anyway?
Yeah, no one has books with barcodes anymore.
You go through the ebooks on your Kindle app and generate them that way.
What are these books with barcodes that you speak of?
Do you mean ebooks? Ebooks?
Electronical books?
Tell me more. Oh man.
So totally off topic, or back on topic, I guess, in putting together this arcade feature, it really made me feel sad, kind of, that I missed out on the golden age of arcades in the late 70s and early 80s just by dint of not being alive yet. You know, by the time I got to arcades, it was, you know, kind of the resurgence with all the fighting games, Street Fighter II and Mortal Kombat, and there were some of the retro games there, but I don't, you know, it was in the mall and it was all bright and clean. I feel like I really missed out on, you know, that whole scene where the arcade was kind of a dangerous place to go for, you know, young hoodlums, and it was a dirty, dark place where, you know, you had to put your quarter up there and then prove yourself. You know, I'm getting all of this from pop culture, so it's probably totally wrong, but it's the kind of thing that I'm sad I missed out on.
Well, I kind of came in. I mean, I'm probably just a little bit older than you, Kyle. So I was like kind of in the middle. Like my dad was really kind of into the older arcade culture from the 70s, mm-hmm. and then I was born in 1981. So I kind of like got a little bit of that old school stuff from him. But then as I grew older, I became, you know, kind of into arcade culture, the newer arcade culture that you mentioned, like with the fighting games and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely weird. I felt like I wasn't super familiar with how it used to be, but it was fun. Even when I went to college, which was like in, you know, the very late 90s, like 1999, arcades were still kind of popular, but they were definitely dying out. I think at this point, you know, they're very rare, but it was fun. It was a fun, like, it was a thing that you could do and go with your friends and go and, you know, play all these games and have your, like, Coke and fries. Because you're a young person, so you can't drink yet. Whereas now, of course, as we know, the whole idea of the barcade is definitely coming in, where they're putting in bars with old arcade games. There's one that just opened in Chicago. We used to have an older one, but they shut that one down. So it's becoming really popular, though. People are getting into it.
Yeah, it feels different. You know, the idea of an arcade as a place to be. Nowadays, you know, if you want to play games with someone, you can just do it from the comfort of your home online. And, you know, I'm sounding like an old man. Kids these days don't understand how good they've got it and such. But, you know, back when the arcades first came around, it was really the consoles weren't even a big presence in the home. And if you wanted to, you know, to socialize over games, that was the place to be. Even with the barcades now, I feel like they're tapping into a little bit of nostalgia, but they're not really going to hold the same cultural importance as they used to, because they were really the place for video games. Yeah,
definitely not going to hold the same importance. But I do think that, I mean, this is entirely based on my own experience, so I could be completely wrong. But I do think that it does introduce a new element to it, just by virtue of being like a bar with, you know, with adults who can drink. It kind of, you know, makes it fun. Even, you know, nostalgia aside, it does make it fun, where you could be drinking a beer and you're having a huge, I don't even know, like Donkey Kong war with your friends. I mean, that's fun.
It's the kind of thing you care about a lot more when you've had a few beers.
Yeah, definitely. I think we talked about this a little bit among the staff, but I think definitely Joust would get very heated with a few beers.
Gauntlet. I'd like to play Gauntlet with people with some beer.
Yeah, you better have a lot of quarters for that one. Yeah. If you're drunk, you're not going to, you know, be as ruthlessly efficient as you need to be.
That's a game
with your
for
health.
The 1%. You got to be able to afford it. Yeah.
Especially if you're drunk.
I was going to say, it seems like most or a lot of popular old games rely a lot on like dexterity and timing, which is not a good combination with alcohol. So it's like, I don't know, you're just setting yourself up to give up a lot of your quarters going in there and drinking beer and then trying to play Joust. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
if you're not, you
just have to be not super competitive about it, and having a few beers in you might help with that too.
It's more about just having fun doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I used to really like, I don't know if it's still there, but on 31st near Pulaski here in Chicago, there was a little hot dog joint. Like, there's a million hot dog joints in Chicago, but everybody has their local, right? And we used to go to this one, and they had Ghosts and Goblins. That game was amazing, and I wanted to play it because I always like stuff with monsters and ghosts and vampires. And it was so hard. I would bring all this cash, all these quarters, and they would just go in there, and I wouldn't really make it very far. And I just wanted to see more of the Haunted Cemetery. That, I mean, there's games like that where I just, the visuals alone are enough for me to like keep coming back to it.
So yeah, the whole design idea back in those classic arcade games was totally different than what games are now. You know, the way the business model worked, they had to be super hard, so you would keep putting in quarters. But still, what your skill got you was extra time with the game compared to, you know, like a console game you buy now. You've already bought the game, so really their interest is in kind of holding your hand a lot of the times just to get you through to the end. And then once you've finished it, you can get more downloadable content. So the business model has totally changed and really made the way games are designed totally different nowadays. I feel like the retro games were almost always about skill and developing your skills, whereas today it's more about telling a story and really holding your hand.
So many of those, you know, there was no demo level or tutorial level. You just were plopped right into it, and you just have to figure it out. And I recall friends just, you know, leaning over your shoulder telling you how to play it.
Yeah, and they would always be a little deceptive too. You know, when you put in that quarter, the first few levels, like the first level of Pac-Man or the first guy you fight in Street Fighter 2 would be kind of easy, lull you into a false sense of security, like, oh yeah, I'm good at this, I can really get. And then you'd hit like the third level, and it would suddenly get really, really hard, and you die, and you're like, oh, what happened? I was just so good at this, and it really makes you want to put in another quarter and just keep going. They were good at the psychology back then.
What jerks.
Now, Kyle, when you were playing all these games growing up, mm-hmm. at any point did you ever think, like, I would like to write about these for a living?
I actually wanted to make them for a living back then. I studied computer science in college just for that reason. And then computer science got a little too hard for me, truth be told. So I switched over to journalism and finished out that degree and decided to write about them instead, just so I could hang on and be a part of the industry and play games for the rest of my life, hopefully.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember there was a Far Side comic back when I was growing up that there's two parents watching a kid playing video games, and in their thought bubble there's these classified ads looking for, you know, princess saver needed or video game training, we'll pay $50 an hour for someone to show me how to beat the final boss. And then the caption is hopeful parents. So
I can see that being, that's like hilarious to parents back in the, I guess in the 90s probably. They think their kids are wasting time on everything. But see, look at us now. We're turning a whole podcast episode into video games.
We've done good.
And even the people who don't, you know, play video games for a living anymore, I think they got certain skills out of playing video games. Not just, you know, like hand-eye coordination, but I find that it kind of acclimates you to technology. You know, if you grew up with these games that really reward you for experimenting with things, like hit the A button, see what it does, then when you encounter a new program, for instance, you're more willing to experiment. You're more willing to just try something out and not want to break it, you know, or not worry about breaking it. I find with the older generation, they really didn't grow up with video games, and I feel like that might have some relation to why they're not as comfortable with technology.
This discussion comes up a lot in our house because my parents played, my dad played to some extent with us, but really at a certain point they just bought us the consoles and we played a lot. And I do think that trial and error mentality, it comes directly from video games. Like, that really helps you to just not be afraid of learning a new program or installing something. But I do think there's this other weird ethereal thing about, you remember you talked about the way that in The Wizard they just intuit that there's this
the warp whistle. Yeah,
warp whistle. I do think if you play video games long enough, you learn how to look for certain things in different kinds of games, and I think you can train yourself certainly with software the same way. Like, you know how to look for, like, you know, hidden doors in games, you might be willing to look at something like photo editors and just say, oh, every time I see the certain icons, like, I should try these different actions. I think there is some connection there, and I find it really useful. I don't think I certainly wouldn't have the job I have today without video games, but I think my relationship with technology would be really different, because that was my real entry point. It wasn't the home computer. My first computer in the home was actually lots of consoles.
Yeah, and you know, if you had something like Game Genie, that would even be your first exposure to hacking a little bit, you know, trying out different combinations and seeing what codes you could get to, you know, make Mario have infinite lives or turn all the sprites in a game a different color, things like that. It's a really good entry point for a lot of different technology fields, I feel.
Yeah, that Game Genie was really cool. Do any of you guys actually have any of this old hardware in your house now? Or did you put it up for sale, etc.?
I didn't bring anything with me. I'm not a huge gamer in my normal life, but I mean, I can get into it, but I never brought anything with me once I left college. So I think for a while we had like an Xbox, but then we got rid of that. So now we just have a Wii, and then we play, you know, any random old games on the online Wii stuff, which of course I can't even remember the name for, but, I tried to play Mario 3 sometime recently and I failed miserably, so.
You don't have it in your muscle memory anymore?
No, well, sort of. The thing is, I think it's hard for me to remember exactly which levels require which kinds of muscle memory.
Yeah.
I was always into Dr. Mario. Similar to being into Tetris, I guess, but not exactly the same. So I played Dr. Mario still on the Wii, and I kick all sorts of ass against, like, Korean players and stuff. Because no one in the United States is playing Dr. Mario, that's for sure.
I think they've moved on to Call of Duty, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. But no, I don't have any consoles.
If only Dr. Mario were still that popular.
I know. I wish. I would kick everyone's ass on Dr. Mario.
But I have a lot of retro consoles sitting right here next to my desk, actually, hooked up to the old Sony Trinitron, because you really need the old SDTV. Hooking up to the HDTV just feels a little wrong. But looking, I got the Dreamcast, Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64, Xbox, and Atari, and top-loading NES hooked up right now.
Jesus.
Much to my wife's chagrin. She doesn't know why I keep all these things around. And, you know, I really don't play them as often as I should, because there's always new games coming out. And, you know, I feel like I've played most of these games out. But there's times where you really just need to turn your brain off and play some Balloon Fight and go back to when your life was a little more carefree. And doing that on the original hardware, there's something to be said for that.
I have an N64 in my closet, and it doesn't belong to me, so I should probably sell it.
Did you steal it?
No, this is one ex-boyfriend ago. We used to play all the time, played GameCube, and we played N64, and somehow the N64 that's here, he left it, but I never play it. And the games that I want from it, which is Ocarina of Time and a couple of other ones, I've got those in the Wii, so I should just put it up for sale.
You never know. He might come back one day and say, where's my N64?
Yeah, then you'll be in trouble.
Yeah, that would be...
That's when you're like, I have no idea. I haven't seen it in years.
What?
I don't know where that N64 is. Mm-hmm.
I still have the N64 and the SNES. They're up in the closet. The N64 I was still kind of attached to, but now that I've got, you know, the Ocarina of Time and Star Fox on the 3DS, it's like I don't really need it anymore.
It's interesting that you guys are all saying basically that, oh, I have the games that I want and the games that I remember on modern systems now, so it's kind of a way to preserve the old games. You know, this hardware doesn't last forever, and there's a big concern in the community that we're going to lose some of our history if you know, these old cartridges and stuff eventually break down. But, you know, through emulation and through all these downloads on the Virtual Console, it sounds like you guys really aren't feeling it.
Well, on a very serious note, I really do wish Library Science would focus their efforts a little bit on this, because these are definitely, like, important documents. I don't know if we can call them documents, but they're important markers of our society. And there's so many cool games. Like, I wish one could just go to an index and see what they were. And, you know, not that you could play it, but they should have somewhere where that those ROMs and everything are archived.
Yeah, there's a few that are starting to. The International Center for the History of Electronic Games is amassing quite a collection, not just of the games themselves, but they're getting papers and notes from people like Will Wright, and huge collections of video game magazines going back to the early 70s, I think, just at the creation of the medium. So people are really starting to try and archive video game history, realizing that it's important, and that if we don't start now, some of it's going to be lost forever.
I think it's been exciting recently to see some of these source code releases. Like earlier this year, the original Prince of Persia source code for the Apple II was published on GitHub. And I mean, they went through all kinds of trouble to get that code out, you know, because it was on a 22-year-old disk, and you know, they had to do some serious work to restore it. You know, between that and a 30-page reference document from the original game design that have been published, it's just this amazingly rich amount of information about the creation of this game, which is, you know, like one of the, you know, historically significant pivotal games. And, you know, there are some companies like id where they consistently publish the source code of their legacy engines. I think that's just great. I think that it would be nice if more companies in the industry got on board with that.
Yeah, it's you got to wonder, though. It's kind of like the copyright extension for Mickey Mouse. Some of these games, they're still making money on. If people are still downloading Super Mario Brothers, for instance, it wouldn't really make much sense for Nintendo to put that out. They're kind of a little protective of their old stuff. So there's a give and take from the business side for that.
You know what I wish they would re-release would be Mortal Kombat. I know that I wrote about this for that feature, but seriously, I used to love Mortal Kombat. I would play that every day right now if I could get it somehow on some sort of modern system that I own.
There's an iPad version, isn't there? Not of the original, but like...
Oh, that's not the same.
No.
Not unless you have some sort of Bluetooth controller. doing that on a touchscreen, that's just sacrilege to me.
I can't even imagine how that would work. I mean, if it exists, I should check it out.
They kind of have the button overlays, you know, where there's a transparent button and a joystick on the screen that you try out. I'm pretty sure Mortal Kombat is on there.
Okay, yeah, but, I see Ryan has linked us here.
Yeah, I put the link in the chat.
Yeah, does that work with the iCade, do you know?
I have no idea. That would be badass if it did, though. That would be awesome.
That would be almost required, I would say. I would not even attempt to play that game without real buttons.
I have to agree. I just think this is one of those things that you need the classic experience for, which just does not involve the touchscreen.
I don't know. I've seen a few arcade ports to the iPad that have been pretty good. Like, I used to love that X-Men arcade game, and the iPad version is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like that.
You don't find it frustrating when you go for the attack button and you hit the jump button instead?
Not so much. I mean, it hasn't really been that big of an issue for me with that one. I mean, granted, the controls for that are pretty simple. With a fighting game like Mortal Kombat, where the controls are more sensitive, it'd probably be harder.
Okay.
I don't know.
One of the retro experiences I really like on the iPad is an app called Pinball Arcade, where they try and emulate some of the classic pinball machines through video. You know, It's not the feeling of the actual machine, obviously, since you're just holding a slight iPad in your hand, but they really do a good job of capturing all the lights and how the bumpers work and the physics model of how the pinball actually moves about. And you tap one side of the iPad for the left bumper and one side for the right. I've really gotten addicted to playing Medieval Madness on that one recently.
Oh, that's cool. Does it let you zoom in on the action, or is it always from the same angle above the machine?
There's a few camera options. One of them is set, and it's kind of got a perspective. And then when you go into multi-ball, it kind of gives you a lower angle so you can focus on the flippers. There's also ones that follow the ball around a little bit if you want to see precisely what's going on. I prefer the fixed angle. It's a little weird, though, because it's in portrait mode rather than landscape. And you would think in landscape mode you could see kind of the taller table better. Yeah. But it works out, especially if you have... I think they just added Retina support for the iPad 3, so you can really get down and see the details on the lights and everything. Definitely check it out.
You know, you mentioned that we said that there's a lot of the games that we want are already in our homes in some way, but I would bet that everybody has a title that they wish they could be playing now that they, you know, is from years ago, and I wonder if we can each talk about what that title would be. Like, please bring that back, or let me have it now.
Well, mine, I think I just said, and I totally stick to it, which would be an old school Mortal Kombat with the controller. I would play that right now if someone gave it to me.
You should invest in the iCade and download the iTunes version, it sounds.
Yeah, sounds I actually just found a forum post that says that you can map iCade buttons to touchscreen presses. So
can you really?
It doesn't work on an official basis. But, yeah, according to this one guy, he says he lists the Mortal Kombat that's in the iTunes store or the App Store as one of the ones that works with it.
Huh.
So,
okay.
Jackie's in trouble.
Yes, I am. I'll have to check that out.
Mine would be Castlevania 3.
Yes!
That was a good one.
Man, if they could just install it in my house and let me play it every day when I wake up, that game is amazing.
I just want... Okay, what I want is a modern Castlevania screen scroller. Like the kind that was on the original DS. Like, if they could do a console, like a Wii version of that, I would be just in heaven. That would be mine.
Kind of like the Mega Man 9 and 10 re-releases that they made?
Yeah.
With the modern design, but retro
feel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I have pretty much every... I've been collecting for a little bit, so I don't have a huge collection, but I have all the games that I really want, so I'll put out one for the community that seems to be a big request, and that's Earthbound for the Super Nintendo. I don't know if any of you played it. It's kind of a cult classic RPG with a really twisted sense of humor, and everyone has been pushing for it to be re-released on the Wii Virtual Console. Nintendo doesn't seem to want to do anything about it. I have no idea why.
That's a shame. I'd like to try that. I don't know. I've never played that.
Yeah, it's. I haven't actually gotten around to it, but based on what I've read, it was really ahead of its time for an RPG. Had good rhythm-based battles and a real sense of humor and a really touching story.
I'm gonna say game I would play right now if they brought it back, and I don't think we actually had a great story about it a few months ago. Uniracers. On Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time playing on that game. That was really fun to play with other people. But still, even by myself, just like time trials, I had a lot of fun with that game. And it has a really... We should put the story about it that we ran in the show notes, because it's a great story. It got like locked up in some kind of copyright battle, and they only made like... They made like one run of it, and then they could never make it again. And it's very sad because it was a great game.
Well, I guess on that note, we will wrap up. Thank everyone for listening, and thank all of you guys for being on the show. And I know that Cesar will include all of these random games that we mentioned in our show notes if we can do that.
I would like a game where you're Dracula and you're sitting in the throne room for 5 hours while Simon Belmont just is working his way through your castle, and then you get 5 minutes of gameplay where you kill Simon Belmont, and that's the whole game.
So you're saying like Animal Crossing with the occasional fight like every 5 days or something?
Yeah, but you have to actually sit there, and I don't know, maybe it'll require a button press to make sure you're paying attention because and not falling asleep.
So that for that game, you'd have like a tower defense mode where you're trying to like set up all your little monsters to prevent the guy from getting to you or something.
Oh, that's so cool. See, that sounds great to me. I would buy that.
Waiting for Belmont.
Waiting for Belmont.
I think that would be a funny mini game, honestly.